Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, August 19th, 2015. And with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. And how are you, Dave?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well, too. And it's great to have you here. I've been mixing it up a little bit lately, and I'm sure our listeners have noticed. I'm doing some of our shows just as a one-on-one instead of a three-way, as they say. So I think it's really cool to have you here just one-on-one like this.
One-on-one works for me. I'm not scared if you're not.
You know, I've got an open mind. I'm not scared.
There we are.
Yeah.
Speaking of open minds, Google released a router. No, wait a minute. That's the other story.
I'm sure we can figure a way to blend them together. But since you mentioned OnHub, let's jump into that.
Sure.
The quick rundown is that that yesterday, which would have been Tuesday, Google announced their own Wi-Fi router hub device that would be akin to Airport Extreme, except that it has several other features built in. So it's designed so that when you plug it in and turn it on, it can do self-configuration stuff for your network. It then will monitor your network and can channel hop for Wi-Fi so that you're always getting the best signal, which means that you should get better network performance. You can then also set specific devices on your network to have priority so that they get bandwidth before other devices. And the way I was visualizing that is, say you have an Apple TV or Roku or something like that, your media streaming device. You want to make sure that it gets priority so that you have TV shows and movies streaming without any problem.
I want to nitpick some of those things, because there's some things you don't know. Yeah. So you're right. It's hardware wise, it's actually quite similar to Apple's router. At least in terms of the network protocols, right? It's got both 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz radios in it that operate mm-hmm. simultaneously, mm-hmm. which Apple does. The 2.4 operates all the way up through 802.11n, and 5 operates up through 802.11ac, again, just like Apple's Airport Extreme, and both have what are called 3x3 antenna arrays, which means they actually have 3 antennas per radio, 6 antennas if you really want to nitpick, and that allows things to run much faster because you can send 3 streams simultaneously. This is all perfect world kind of stuff, but it does really help. And it's where things like Apple's beamforming also help, because you can say, okay, that device over there is closer to the place where this antenna is pointing. So we're going to send its traffic there first and perhaps maximize the speed because that antenna has a better connection to that device than, say, this antenna does.
It happens automatically.
It does. And that happens automatically in Apple stuff, too. Now, I don't know the level at which it happens in Apple stuff. I know it happens with 802.11ac. That, I believe, is called active beamforming, where both the client and the router negotiate that, and that's part of the 802.11ac protocol. There is also passive beamforming, which some routers do. I don't believe Apple's one. We don't know if this Google OnHub is one, or at least I don't know if Google's OnHub is one, where the router does its own calculations and says, even though I can't get feedback directly back from the device, here's what I'm noticing, so I'm going to go ahead and do this anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a cool thing. So, you're right. Hardware-wise, they're similar. This has a gig of memory. The OnHub does. I think that's probably a little more than what Apple's has, but I don't know. It has a speaker in it, but that speaker doesn't appear to be used for anything other than setup tone confirmation. I don't think it's built to be used like the Amazon Echo, that it's going to talk to you and you talk to it or anything like that. So,
Google's kind of vague about what the speaker is going to be used for right now.
Yeah, exactly. Now, to your point about it prioritizing devices, I think I've read into it, and what I interpret that to mean is, I think, a little bit different than what you explained. I think it's partially this beamforming thing, which would make sense. And I think it's also more of a packet shaping or quality of service engine inside the router, right? And this is a software engine. Quality of service is something, or is a series of protocols by which you say, hey, I want to prioritize this type of traffic, or I want to deprioritize that type of traffic and make sure that, say, my Skype connections always get priority. And, you know, those FTP connections where I'm down, or BitTorrent connections where I'm downloading all kinds of data, you know, those can be deprioritized. It doesn't matter. Let the more important stuff through first. That's sort of what I got from it. I didn't get that it was actually reconfiguring the network any more than beamforming would let you do.
Ah, okay. The way Google described it, and I didn't have time to dive under the hood as deeply as you have, so yeah. Thank you for doing that.
Sure.
Made it sound like you could pick a specific device and say, give this device priority.
Well, you can, but again, what it's not, it's going to give it priority for network traffic, not for wireless traffic, if that makes sense.
Ah, okay. That sounds subtle, but
it is subtle.
But it's also a big thing.
Right. If you've got some device that's just blazing traffic across the Wi-Fi network to another device, that's still going to get in the way of, you know, I mean, Wi-Fi is still shared, but by nature of it doing this QoS stuff, which typically QoS is typically only for traffic from the inside to the outside, or the outside to the inside, but not from the inside to the inside. So, for example, you backing up to your time capsule would not necessarily be filtered or controlled by QoS in a router, but you backing up to crash plans servers would be, because that's going out of your network. So it's more about managing the bandwidth. QoS is more about managing the bandwidth of your internet connection and maximizing that. Now, Google might be doing something more. I don't know. Right? I mean, they're sort of light on details thus far. So I'm not entirely sure. We've reached out to them to get more clarification and actually get one of these to play with. So it's an interesting thing. The big question, and I'm a big fan of routers that aren't Apple's, but don't take that the wrong way. Apple actually makes fantastic routers from a hardware standpoint. We just went through all of that. They just limit their features, but that's what Apple does, mm-hmm. right? They don't give you all these things to tweak, because then that creates a support nightmare, and it allows any user to get themselves into trouble where their device isn't working optimally. And Apple's priority is for you to have awesome hardware that works optimally, not necessarily exactly to your specifications, right? So they hide a lot of those things. Apple's routers are perfectly capable of doing all this. They just don't have the software to do it. The question is, will this Google On Hub be something that those of us who mainly use Apple computers, and I'll say computers including iPhones and iPads and all of that stuff, you know, will this be manageable from a Mac or from your iPhone? Because they talk about setting it up with a Google On app.
And I did look into that.
Okay.
The Google On app is iPhone and Android.
Brilliant. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Now, what made me excited about that part was that it means if you are an Apple Gear user for everything else, you could still use this if it's the right device for you. And I'm thinking for some people it may be, because it also has the protocols built in to support many smart home protocols.
Ah, right. Okay. Yep.
So if a manufacturer says, yeah, we're going to update our device, which is using the, you know, whichever of the wireless protocols that there's three that are supported by the device.
Sure.
Then that can become your smart bridge for all of those devices.
Nice.
And that's kind of what got me excited about this, and really thinking, okay, it's time for Apple to up its game with AirPort Extreme. Because we have smart homes now.
Right.
We have these devices we're adding in. And here I am, a guy that only, let's say like 3 months ago, I had nothing smart home savvy in my place. And now I have two smart bridges, one from Lutron, one from Philips. I also have Belkin smart switches plugged into the walls. And so I have all this gear that's plugged in, and none of it can talk to each other. And being able to eventually have all those devices talk together and have a single bridge sounds like a really cool thing for me.
Yeah.
Now, I know I'm talking about two things there.
Right, right.
Replacing the bridge, and then the other part's more of a HomeKit thing.
Very cool. Huh. Yeah, I like this. I mean, we need to learn more about it. We need to get it in our hands. Not that Google doing this on their own in their own little, you know, skunkworks operation that they've got going on there would be a bad thing, because they're pretty good at this kind of stuff. But they did do this in partnership with TP-Link, who has been making network hardware for a long time. So there's some smarts in there. There's some interesting things. One of the 2.4 gigahertz antennas appears to be a little more directional than the others, so you can kind of aim your router at the, you know, problem spots in your house and just have it fix that potentially, which is cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And since this is like it is a cylinder,
yes,
aiming it is nothing more than just twisting it so that the antennas that are internal are facing whatever direction you want.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Now, whether or not this implementation pans out and is really good is another thing, because you can't actually get this yet, so we don't know how good the product really is.
Correct.
What has me really excited is the concept of what the product is, and that's what has me thinking it's time for Apple to redesign the AirPort Extreme again.
Which they just did recently.
Two years ago.
Was that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That was
2013.
Oh, yeah. Really? I would have sworn it was last year at WWDC, but you're right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's time. Yeah, but what are they going to do? I mean, to be honest, in terms of what I would expect Apple to make out of a router, the AirPort Extreme still does it.
It does.
It's got all the, you know, all the hardware stuff. It's still best in class. It's not necessarily the best. There are others equal to it. But in terms of Wi-Fi range and all of that stuff, it's still right at the top with, you know, most of the others. There are some that are faster a little bit. You know, there's some people doing crazy, you know, 4x MIMO and stuff that gets nuts. But for what most people need, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced there's enough of a demand or enough of a hole, a gap between the, you know, what Apple has and what people need, that they would do that. But I mean, who am I to say?
Yeah. And who am I to say as well? Cause I'm looking at my AirPort Extreme and I bought it because it gave me the best signal that I could get. And that was my single need. I needed to be able to throw a signal strong and far. And that's what I got out of this. So I'm still glad to have it, and I'm not going to replace it unless someone can convince me that there's something that's much better. But I don't need anything better than this right now. But it would be nice to have more software control over the guts of this thing. But then that comes back to what you're saying. Apple doesn't do that. They give us the device, you plug it in, it does what it's supposed to do, and we don't need to worry our pretty little heads about anything else.
Yeah. I'm curious to see this Google thing. I'm a router geek. We talk about routers all the time on Mac Geek Gab, and I'm curious to see what happens with this. I think it certainly serves at the very least the same market that Apple is serving with the AirPort Extreme, but the same type of user that Apple is serving, but cross-platform. And that's a good thing.
Yes.
You know, it's built to be easy. It's not built to be for geeks, right? It's built to be easy, but it might have enough in there, you know, especially if as we learn more about how they're doing QoS and managing and kind of shaping all the bandwidth, that might be enough to kind of tip the casual user towards, hey, wait a minute, you know, this thing does all this cool stuff that I hear geeks talk about, but I don't want to learn, but it does it anyway. And to be fair, like Netgear is doing some of that too, right? They,
sure.
They have a kind of an automatic profile downloader where it actually does your speed test in the background on the router and then manages your bandwidth for it using profiles that they download, that they create and your router downloads. So it knows that Skype should be better than BitTorrent and that sort of thing. You can tweak them, but it's constantly updating those, which is cool, right?
Yeah, so, that's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, we're moving into a good realm. Apple does have the opportunity to do something like this here. So maybe I'll eat my words. Maybe there's more of a gap there than I initially stated.
Well, I guess we'll see. So I'm looking forward to when you get one of these in your hands, because I'm assuming that that Google is going to get one out to you. They would be wise to do so.
I would love to check one out. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they do, I'm looking forward to hearing what you think.
Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. So we are running short on time, but before we wrap up, just real quick, I wanted to get your thoughts on this whole data dump that the Impact team did yesterday. And the data dump I'm talking about are the 32 million user records that they got from Ashley Madison when they hacked into their servers and have now dumped online.
Speaking of BitTorrent, I think that's how you can go download all that data, is it's being distributed via a torrent.
Yes.
So I do have some thoughts on this. Number one, I don't believe in the value of cheating on your spouse. I've always said if I felt like I needed to cheat on Lisa, meaning, you know, have a relationship with another woman without her knowledge, I would tell her first and we would just split up, because it'd be easier that way. Then that way I don't have to sneak around and her, you know, vice versa. Right.
Sure.
Thankfully we haven't yet encountered that. So that's a good thing, right? Thumbs up. And I would probably give that advice to any friend that said to me, hey, I'm having an affair, because it's just easier that way. And I'm oversimplifying things of relationships, but, you know, sometimes it's easier to do that.
Yeah. You know, and in some relationships, like, I'm going to turn you into a hypothetical situation.
Sure.
So let's say that you went to Lisa and said, look, I love you. Everything we have is awesome. But I need something else, or in addition, sexually. So I need to find additional partners. And then she says, "All right, let's sit down. Let's figure out the parameters.
Sure,
and we'll figure out the rules that we're going to play within. And then you establish that, and you go out and find that other someone or someones that fulfills those extra needs, and you're good to go."
And you're good to go. Or, I mean, you're right. And just to be clear, that's hypothetical and hasn't happened.
Yes.
But right. just in case. But and so Ashley Madison could be used for any of those purposes. It can also, and was very specifically targeted at people that wanted to do this discreetly, presumably discreetly from their spouse or significant other. And while I don't believe in that for myself, and certainly would advise others against it, at least until warning or learning more, I also firmly believe that anything I do online, or frankly anywhere where the provider promises me privacy, I have a reasonable expectation of that privacy being maintained. And mm-hmm. And just because I'm a human being and I'm not that much of a jerk, I also kind of expect the rest of the world to maintain that level of privacy. But that's a slippery thing, right? If we get information about, say, Apple building a car that Apple hasn't announced, at what level do we feel, if we know the information is true, which we did when we reported that, you know, is where is that line, right? And so the same could be said about, well, we know the people that stole this data from Ashley Madison. We know that this information is true. It should be out there. And listen, if I were a divorce attorney, I'd probably be downloading and sifting through that information all day long today and wouldn't be able to be on this show.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's a treasure trove of potential clients right there.
Oh, yeah. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. But you know, I'm not a divorce attorney. And so I am perhaps hypocritically upset with the group that has released all these names to the public.
You know, I'm upset with the group as well. And
but I understand that it may very well be hypocritical, especially when you just boil it down to being a very simple should they or should they not have done this question.
Well, to me, there's a difference. And I'll use us reporting about Apple's car as the comparison. So when we reported about Apple's car, we were reporting industry information that we had obtained and been able to confirm to some level.
Sure.
And what the people or person, whatever, that got a hold of the Ashley Madison database did was they broke laws to get at information and then turned around and used that information to try and blackmail a company into doing what they wanted.
That's true. Now, it could be argued, and I'm thinking through the path that the Apple car data came to us from. In that particular instance, I don't think any laws were broken or even any agreements were broken, at least in terms of the people that passed the information to us. And I need to sort of leave it obscure like that.
Right.
But that's not always the case, right? I mean, there have been times when people have brought us information that I'm sure they've broken an NDA for. In this case, I don't believe that to have been the case. Maybe somewhere in the chain somebody did. I don't know enough about it in that sense. But yeah, you're right. It's not like we went to Apple and said, hey, we're going to talk about this car that you're doing if you don't also do X that we believe you should do, right? I mean, that's just not cool.
No, that's not cool. No. And yeah. To me, that's where the big difference comes in.
Yeah. I admire them for following through on their threat.
Yeah, well, they were kind of in a position where they had to. They put themselves in a corner.
Yep.
Where they had to follow through.
Yeah, you got to – I mean, it's like, you know, I always say this with you know, as we've been raising our kids for the last 16 years, threaten whatever you feel you must, but be ready to carry through on it if your bluff is called.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
The way I see it, threats should be considered warnings and advisories when they come from me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, with that, we've been very careful not to threaten to punish our kids in a way that we wouldn't actually punish them, because we know we have to carry through. And so in that sense, like I said, I respect that these people, even if they felt like they went a little overboard, they carried through on their threat. But I just don't think it was cool. I think it was a bad threat to make.
I agree. It was a bad threat to make. And I think stealing the data in the first place wasn't the best life choice they could have made.
No, they could have found the hole and pointed out the hole to Ashley Madison. And perhaps, you know, even gotten a consulting gig out of it, right? I mean, there's other ways to personally benefit from this and not like screw the world. But and I say the world, I realize they feel like they're doing the world a service by only punishing those that are in their eyes morally unjust. But there's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, relationships are complicated.
They are. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, we're out of time. So we're going to have to wrap up. Dave, I'm so glad that you're able to join me today.
Same. Yeah, this was fun.
Yeah, it was lots of fun. And I'm looking forward to hearing more from you about the On Hub after you get one in your hands. And listeners, thank you for joining us today. And do me a favor, go over to the iTunes store and rate the show, because I love your feedback. And when you're rating the show, you're also making it easier for other people to find us and join in on interesting conversations like this. So please do that for me. Thank you for listening yet again today. We'll see everyone tomorrow.